KALW.
This person was moving to the US from Iran many decades ago and just could not imagine living the rest of her life without this mint. And so she brought it here right next to her heart.
Sometimes we really need to taste specific flavors to fight our homesickness.
It's basically up to us as a collective, like the collective organism of the diaspora, to keep this stuff moving forward, to keep it progressing, even to allow it to change.
Today, a local Iranian farmer grows the herbs of home. Then an art exhibit encourages visitors to look inside themselves to feel empowered.
This show is kind of a way to help the viewer to pull back and be kind to the self.
Finding a home within. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're starting with a story from our series, Culture Keepers, celebrating the Bay Area's unique spaces and communities.
People just look at it like you're just driving a piece of junk on the streets. But to us, it's like a canvas on wheels.
There's a lot of dirt, rocks, love, and sweat. Maybe a couple of cigarettes.
Do copy. Do something. No rights reserved, no wrongs preserved.
I felt like I was with my people.
When you're a part of a diaspora, there are things you miss from your homeland. The sights, the sounds, and the flavors. In the heart of Petaluma, a small farm is keeping a cherished Iranian food tradition alive. Sama Mansouri grows sabzi, a vibrant mix of traditional herbs that accompanies every meal in Iranian homes. And it's something that many in the Iranian diaspora have missed while living here in the Bay Area. People like Nigar Ajayabi, a former fellow in our KALW summer journalism program. Nigar brings us this story about longing, culture, and the lengths we'll go to bring a taste of home to new soil.
I'm in the kitchen preparing an Iranian dinner with my friends. There's rice with dill and fava beans and lamb shank. There's an eggplant dish with fried onions and curd, which tastes sour and savory. There's rice and chicken with Iranian dried plums. And there's one very important dish I'm going to put out on the dining table. Sabzi. Sabzi is a big dish full of fresh, raw greens. Herbs like mint and cilantro, chives, parsley, dill, purple basil, plus Iranian leek, shahi, Iranian cress, and radishes. It's a vibrant and fragrant dish. And some of the herbs have a touch of spiciness. Some are sweet. And my guests today know it well.
I remember my grandmother used to buy kilos of sabzi khurdan and bring them home. And as she washed the muddy vegetables, she would talk about every single person she knew in the world.
Sabzi was always the extra fresh taste and smell added to every family breakfast we had when I was a child.
And, you know, as we get older, sabzi khurdan became a regular part of our drinking rituals with friends, especially when all we had was a cheap bottle of vodka. And we used to eat radishes and chives just to help us swallow it.
The table is still being set. Sabzi is a cold dish, so it's among those first things to be placed on the table. It's our appetizer, and we don't eat it with utensils like how we eat salad. We simply take a bunch by hand and just eat it. A warm, deep aroma of saffron and steamed rice is in the air, and the toaster is beeping. That means the sangak bread is ready. We take a piece of bread, scoop up some feta cheese, and add a handful of sabzi to it, and start the meal. Sabzi is an important part of Iranian cuisine that accompanies every meal. No Iranian table is complete without the big dish of greens. Living here in the Bay Area, when I would go to the grocery store, I would find some elements of sabzi. The cilantro, the dill, the parsley. But I wouldn't find our traditional herbs like Iranian leek or purple basil or tarragon. I was craving these flavors of home. I missed having a complete sabzi dish on our dinner table. Then, one day I saw a photo of a bundle of sabzi on Instagram. It was beautiful. Someone online was selling sabzi bunches, green bundles beautifully wrapped in white tissue paper. I loved it. Turns out it was from a farm called Rayhan Herb Farm, and it was in Petaluma. Close enough. Its owner was Sama Mansuri. I eagerly got in touch with her and set a time to meet her at her farm. So, on a sunny spring March morning, I got in my car and drove to Petaluma.
Turn right, then turn right.
Hi! Hello! Merci! Happy Noruz! Noruz Hashanah Mubarak! How are you? Nice to meet you.
And after chatting a little, Sama got to work harvesting the herbs.
I think I'm going to start with the hardest one for me today, which is going to be the gishnis.
Gishnis is cilantro in Farsi. This was the first harvest of the year.
In the early pandemic, I was calling relatives, you know, checking in, keeping busy. And one question that I was asking them was if they could tell me about Iranian plants. Across everyone I spoke to, what kept coming up and what people wanted so badly and missed so badly was sabzi.
Sama started growing food when she was in college. She worked in a school garden for a few years afterwards. And she spent a couple of years growing Iranian ingredients, especially sabzi, in her backyard in Oakland. But she realized she wanted to go bigger.
Like, sabzi is not difficult to grow. If I were able to get the seeds, I think I could do this and, like, give them to these people who are missing them so badly. So that's what kicked off the backyard or farming project. And my hope is that other people also start similar projects, because I can't be the only person growing Iranian food out here. But do I want to grow shatut?
Shatut is black mulberry.
Then, like, all the different stone fruit and, like, chaghal badum.
Chaghal badum is unripe or green almonds. It's sour and one of the Iranians' favorite snacks.
Piste and anar and all of these things.
Piste is pistachio and anar is pomegranate.
Absolutely. The problem is I'm just one guy. Like, I can't do all of this. So, yeah, hopefully there's a lot more to come, but I'm really excited about sabzi right now.
Sama walked me across the field and carefully observed the herbs to see if they were ready to pick. I could see how she was adoring them.
You can see it's God. Like, here's some.
Look at this.
This is one little gishnis plant. Do you want to eat some?
Oh, can I?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so nice and fresh. Thank you.
Yeah, the stems are really long because they're all competing for sunlight here. But I think there's a...
It's so delicious.
Yeah?
It was. And also, the experience of being inside a field with rows and rows of green and fragrant nostalgia was something they have never experienced before.
I was such an inside child. I did not know any of this stuff growing up. And then come to find out, like, a year ago, I went and visited some family in Southern California. And my grandfather's sister goes, "You know your grandpa had a farm, right?"
Did you know it?
No, I didn't. And turns out I had relatives farming on both sides of my family, and I had no idea.
Every week after the harvest, she prepares the sabzi bundles and drops them off for her customers, some at the Middle East Market in Berkeley, others at the Oaktown Spice Shop in Oakland.
Mint in a garden, you might have heard before. It just spreads so quickly and it takes over. So that was a concern for me for bringing it to the farm.
After that farm visit, at the end of the harvest season, I visited Sama in her Oakland home. We decided to talk in the backyard. As I was expecting, there were different flower pots with plants, and also a big one with lots and lots of Iranian mint.
So I just decided to build a raised bed in my yard and grow the mint here in Oakland.
It reminded me of back home, of Iranian people loving to have mint with almost everything, from their black teas to the yogurt and cucumber combination in summers, to the sabzi dishes beside their meals, or even having it as a medicine to calm their guts. I was curious how come she grows this much mint in her backyard.
It feels like a parallel to the story of how the mint got here.
Yes, there is a backstory to all this Iranian mint in her house.
I got this mint from someone who got it from someone who got it from someone.
That someone just wouldn't say where they got mint from. Sama kept asking the person who gave the mint to her how they got it. They kept giving no clear answers, just saying so-and-so brought it here many years ago. But she insisted. And finally, the answer that touched Sama.
And the person, like, who is an older Iranian person and generally, like, pretty stern, she got a little smile and she goes, well, she brought it between her breasts. that was like, okay, that's why you're resisting telling me.
She was holding the mint close to her heart.
This person was moving to the US from Iran many decades ago and just could not imagine living the rest of her life without this mint. And so she brought it here right next to her heart. And I think that's really beautiful. And so I think that was also in the back of my head as I was deciding where to grow it. I was feeling like it couldn't be very far away from me. I don't think I would be able to tolerate that.
Today, Sama likes to hold events related to Iranian culture. For the past 2 years, she has been holding a Nowruz event, the Iranian New Year at spring solstice, and also Tirgan, which is the summer solstice that ancient Iranians celebrated.
The goal for it for me is actually for people who come from this culture, from the Sabzi eating culture, from this Tirgan or Nowruz celebrating culture, to be able to engage in that practice without explanation, without the need to like pause and explain what's going on. Because I just think we deserve spaces where we can just be and like do the thing that we want to do without necessarily also turning outward and saying like, okay, in order to make you feel more comfortable here, we're going to tell you what's going on.
Sama says she wants to see more and more people of Iranian descent holding events like her and creating cultural experiences for diaspora, so the traditions don't die off over time. She especially wants to feature more of the people who lived recently in Iran and have fresh memories of it.
It's basically up to us as a collective, like the collective organism of the diaspora, to keep this stuff moving forward, to keep it progressing, even to allow it to change so that we don't forget.
This year's harvest season came to a close in July. Since then, Sama's head has been in February of next year, hoping that more Iranians in the Bay Area will enjoy sabzi right next to their meals in 2025. As for me, I'm not able to pick up sabzi every week, but I bought Sama's seeds, like Iranian cress, purple basil, and Iranian leek, hoping to have them ready by spring, when I will be able to have sabzi on my table every day. For KALW News, I'm Nagar Ajayabi.
Nagar reported that story as part of our summer journalism program. You can hear more of her work at kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Now, let's take a moment for a deep breath and some deep thoughts. How about some poetry? Ariel Niedermeyer is a first-generation descendant of Filipino immigrants whose work explores themes of freedom, sovereignty, and lineages of survival. Here she is reading her poem, All of Us Oracles.
Us sensitive souls are both bird and snake, prophet and alchemist, all of us poets, instruments of the wind, appointed by the stars. Every day we bow to the river to pray, ears flush to the earth, listening our devotion. We who spin gold of an endless night, our fingers deft at weaving even carnage, every indigenous root returned to in awe, braiding a song of hope and memory for all of us. Forgive the dark urge to hide. Forgive the fear of burning when not seeing is necessary for survival. Sometimes the best of us are moved to madness, as when our elders let snakes pierce flesh and in poison drink glorious sight. Remember, we will hold you. Tip cool water to your lips. Sing of love for those who fly too close to the underworld. Remember, it is safe to make a home of your body, to be a witness tuned to pure and ancient things, as if all hands were unbound and reaching for the moon.
That was San Francisco Filipina poet Ariel Niedermeyer reading her poem, All of Us Oracles. Ariel's work was produced as part of our series, Bay Poets. You can hear from more Bay Area poets at kalw.org/baypoets. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. If you're in a place where you're feeling powerless right now, visual artists Joel Jones and Kim Toman have a message for you. Sit with yourself. Take a journey inside you to find power. They're featuring a hope-filled exhibit at the Richmond Art Center called Sentinels and Saviors, Iconic Avatars, and they wanted to reflect the strength found in vulnerability. KLW's Janae Darden spoke with Joel and Kim about what sentinels and saviors mean to them.
Kim, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Joel, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Janae.
So this theme that you all have, saviors and sentinels, I like how they contradict, but they're also the same. Joel, your part of the exhibition is saviors. How did this idea and image of a savior or saviors come to you?
It started during the COVID lockdown time because I had time. All of a sudden, I had a lot more time than usual. And I put myself on a Buddhist retreat, which is something I always wanted to do, but never had given myself permission to do. And during that time, when I had very little outside pressure, I just watched my thoughts. I observed my mind, and I picked up this part of my unconscious, this role that I kept noticing I was playing. And I decided I wanted to investigate it. And so I needed to find a symbol to do that. And the symbol was a winged woman. And the role, I was observing this role that was part of my unconscious behavior that had started in early childhood. And the role was established in my family in early childhood. I was the fixer, the one who would make everything okay. So that's where the word savior came from.
And Kim, your sentinel pieces are made of steel, upright structures. There's an oil painting in the middle. And I understand the works are inspired by your former experience of living with uterine cancer and Chinese terracotta warriors. So can you talk about the relationship or the connection between your experience with cancer and these warriors?
Sure. I went through, I had a cancer in 2014, and it was chemo that was the most dramatic for me. And I think it is for almost everybody who goes through chemo. The cancer, I never felt a thing, but it was the chemo, it was going through the chemo. I call it the scorched earth experience. And it was during that period when I was at home, obviously, and feeling very weak, felt extremely, you know, the cancer, the chemo does that to you. And my mind went back to art history classes that I'd had. And I remembered the Chinese terracotta warriors that were found, but they were made many, many years ago to be buried with the emperor for protection in the afterlife. And I was pondering it and thinking about it, and I thought, well, gee, I wouldn't mind having an army of bodyguards or protectors in this life. So that was the inspiration for making these figures out of steel. And then in the center portion of the piece where the stomach might be, I have paintings.
I love how you did that, where you have the steel and the strength and this armor. And then in the middle, it's almost like I felt like it was like a womb in the middle. I don't know. You know, of course, art is up to different interpretations. I feel like it kind of softened the steel. I like the steel with the oil painting. It's pretty.
Thank you. Yes, I like the combination between the strong and then the vulnerable. The steel is obviously it's tough, and the figures with the ones that do have what might be arms, boy, they look like they're stiff and ready to guard. And then the painting areas are what we call process painting, abstract expressionist type sort of feel, very process and paint, some with brighter colors, some with less bright colors. And that I do think of, you're right, the womb, there is that aspect of it. This the place of vulnerability. So I work with the idea of dualities often in my artwork.
This exhibition, you know, largely is about of encouraging people to kind of go within. And for some people, that's tough to go within. Why did you want to do a show on going within now? Why now?
Well, it's tough out there right now. You know, the country is in conflict with each other. There is just a fear. The fear of each other is being promoted. So the need to go within, to find both an awareness of that vulnerability so that we don't strike out at each other, but that awareness of vulnerability and then the strength that we do have within ourselves as well. And the duality that I deal with in my work requires that there's an awareness of the other. And that, for me, is a life lesson.
Joel, you want to add something?
I think also that because of the stress we're under, we often, you know, we use our distractions, our electronic devices. We're all very distracted a lot from ourselves. And so again, highlighting that message that to go into ourselves and comfort ourselves and do creative thing, you know, do creative work, whether it's art or music or, you know, writing, just the work that connects us to ourselves. This show is kind of a way to help maybe to balance the viewer, to help the viewer to pull back and be kind to the self.
Those were visual artists Joel Jones and Kim Thoman speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview is co-produced with Porfirio Rangel. You can check out Sentinels and Saviors, Iconic Avatars, at the Richmond Art Center. It's free and running through November 21st. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. We meet a composer whose music is designed to be interrupted.
If I really want to do something with her, I'll go, you know, something like that, and try to inspire her. See if she...
Interspecies Sonic Landscapes. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Before we go, here's some music from a Bay Area band. This is Loco Tranquilo from San Francisco. They're playing at Bottom of the Hill in the city tomorrow night. Today's Cross Currents team includes James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Troop Nguyen, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salyer, Shirin Adil, Hanisha Herjani, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.